It's a Jay Krishnamurti quote. It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. So rebel, do things differently, and remember that just because it's popular doesn't mean it's healthy.
Terms of related is your currency. Oh, you can spend it all you like.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Eat Green, Make Green podcast. This is Pat McCauley. As always, I hope everybody is enjoying the holiday season. The episode this week is a fun one. It is the best of the best from 2021. All my favorite clips and snippets from the incredible guests that I have had on over the past year. I also want to just say thank you to you guys, to the people that tune in, to the people that have created the community that is the Eat Green, Make Green podcast. And, you know, I started this thing 4 years ago, and the first episode was my mom, and I had no idea where this was going to go. And it's because of you guys that tune in, that share it with friends and family, that write a review, that recommend it to people, you guys have made it what it has become. And, you know, selfishly for me, because of you guys, you know, I'm now sitting down with people that have truly changed my life and are truly world experts at what they do. And, you know, it's just like I pinch myself when I started this thing, you know, talking to somebody like a Dean Ornish, who will be the first episode coming in January. Like, you know, that was a dream, and now I'm in the dream, you know? So it's just really cool, and it doesn't happen without you guys. And I'm going to continue to try to get the best of the best, and I'm going to continue to push and bring more value and build the community and just keep getting the message that we spread here out. So thank you to all of you guys so much. Because it's just not possible without you. Otherwise, I'm sitting on here talking to nobody. So thank you so much. And super excited for 2022. And we're just going to fucking blow it out of the water in 2022. So here you go. The best of the best from 2021. Saddle up, get the notebooks out, and enjoy. Again, wishing everybody an amazing holiday. Happy New Year. Stay safe, stay healthy, and thank you again. Without further ado, all the amazing guests of 2021.
Terms of related is your currency.
There is nothing manly about your fucking heart not working. There's nothing manly about your dick not working. There's nothing manly about leaving your kids years early, decades too soon, right? There's nothing manly about that. You want to talk about being a man, have the courage, have the confidence to make the unpopular decision. Have the courage, have the confidence to make the decision that is healthier for your family, right? I know exactly who that dude's dad is, right? He did the same fucking shit, right? He treated himself like shit and tied that for some fucked up reason to his manhood. And I guarantee you, I hate to say it, but he probably left this world too soon for that kid, that man, right? And like, you want to be a man, who's going to be the man in the family that breaks the chain of dying early, of heart disease, of cancers, of all these fucking problems? Like, who's going to be the man to step up to break that chain? Who's going to be the man to set the example for your son, for your kids, that there is a better way, there is a healthier way?
It's pretty refreshing. If you're out there and you're running a business or you're building a family or whatever it is, and you've got like a short-term mindset, you can get pretty frustrated when results don't come as quickly as you would expect them to. And you know, my saying, which I'm not supposed to repeat publicly, is my exit strategy. All right. Everybody in a business has supposed to have an exit strategy. My exit strategy is death. Right. And you don't want to say that because I don't want to jinx myself. I certainly love this planet. I don't feel like dying. But when you do that, I was just thinking about this. When you do that, it's pretty refreshing because it's like the little swings, the COVIDs that shut you down for you, they don't matter. It's a really long-term view. So I have to imagine, you know, a place like China that takes a 100-year look at things, supposedly, it's pretty easy to deal with the speed bumps. Like, who cares? Mm. Oh, we didn't make money this week. In the scheme of things, but if you're short-term and you're thinking and you're expecting that could be pretty difficult to deal with because, right? It's like all day, every day, pressure.
Yeah.
But like, no big deal. It's a tough year.
Yeah, it's...
We got 99 more to go. If, and again, I'll give you analogies during this whole thing, but if you're in a 50-mile run, it's going to suck. Maybe for some people it'll suck at 10 miles, 20 miles, 30, you know, different fitness levels, it'll suck at different points within that 50-mile route. And, you know, if friends drive by in a van at mile 30 and there's music blasting and they got hamburgers being grilled off the back of the van and they want to go party, it's pretty hard to continue on the run, right? There's a plan B. But if you're out there and there's nobody and you got to get home to get food, you get home. You deal with it. And so that's really what you're talking about by burning the boats, right? That famous story. Don't give yourself an out. I'll tell you, in Vermont, we have a farm in Vermont, and I had this vision. I wanted to build this general store, revitalize the town, put in this wedding business, bed and breakfast, the farm, rotational farming. We're going to have the food coming from the farm. It's going to go to the general store. Then we're going to cook it. We're going to have weddings. And I thought, you know what, I'll pay for everything. I was fortunate. I had just come back from, you know, my stint on Wall Street. I had some money. I'm going to pay for everything. I'm going to find these young entrepreneurs like I was when I was a kid, and I'm going to hand them these businesses, and they're going to have a leg up because they don't have to struggle like I did. Mm-hmm. It's already paid for, and they've got inventory, and everything's set up, and business is rolling in. They all quit.
Yep.
They all quit, and then the second round quit, and the third round quit, and I scratched my head, and it was like, oh, actually, the struggle... the back against the wall, the mortgage, telling everybody, borrowing, begging, selling your family, doing whatever, that's the reason you don't quit. As soon as you have an out, you quit.
It's like you don't even have to get out of bed before you're already doing something really positive for the planet, for yourself, for your conscience, and most importantly, for animals every day. The easiest, you know, people talk about being animal lovers and you know, they love elephants, or fucking love this, you've got a cat, a dog, or whatever. The easiest way to protect animals, don't stick them in your mouth. You don't have to go out and buy fucking 10 of them or donate shitloads of charity. Before you do any of that shit, just don't fucking stick them in your mouth. And you're already helping to drive down an industry that is the greatest negative environmental impact on this planet and an industry that's responsible for the death of over 100 billion animals a year. And, you know, I mean, why would you want to be a part of that? And, you know, that for me, it was a process. Hey, it was a process. And I often get asked a lot by people in our movement who feel that they're talking to brick walls or beating their head against a brick wall. And I say, yeah, what's your advice? I said, keep having your conversations and keep getting better at them. I said, because the truth is accumulative and it adds up and eventually it becomes too heavy for most people with a conscience. And for me, you know, once the shutters came up, then they never came down again. So keep having your conversations, keep talking about it, because a conversation that you might have with someone now might seem to fall on deaf ears, but it doesn't. It adds up, and it may take a day, it may take a decade, but the truth always will be revealed.
What's the number one thing that someone should know? Is that just like you just said?
Yeah,
90%. Of your risk for that first heart attack can be mitigated by lifestyle modifications.
Right.
So this idea of like, I have bad genes.
Yeah.
That's pretty rare, actually. Yes, people have genetic predisposition to things. But the majority of that risk is because patients have had poor lifestyles. They smoke. They don't sleep right. They don't exercise. Their diets are heavy, very heavy in animal fat.
Yeah.
And if they can just make some changes, then they can reduce that risk.
Yeah.
I ultimately still face that swinging pendulum of life, right? The last year has been challenging for everyone, right? The pandemic, it's canceled everybody's events. It's taken the culmination of their hard work off the calendar. We've all tried to stay with it and do our best, and it's been challenging for everyone. It's been challenging for me on a personal level. I lost my brother. He overdosed in, I'll get emotional. In December, and I had an event on the calendar already for April. And after he passed away, I dug into my training on a deeper level. I wanted to honor him by being the best version of me I could be. And that is both in the recovery community as a human being and as an athlete, right? So the event was Ironman Texas, and I found out 2 days ago that the event's canceled. So now, like, the rug gets pulled out, and again, like, and I question the entire, like, why do we do what we do comes up, right? So I have to be able to weather the storm of life, like, as always. Like, I've been doing these big training sessions as you get ready for an event at the high level, like, my ambition to qualify for Kona. Like, you do intense stuff, and, like, there's a natural progression as you build. And I have this build, and I'm 5 weeks out from when this event was supposed to happen. And, like, now all of a sudden, it's like, okay, it's canceled. And I think to myself, like the wind gets taken out of my sails. And I think to myself, like, I have to be able to embrace with what I've said in the last hour, right? Can I be in the here, in the now? Can I enjoy the, not enjoy, but can I take solace in the fact that all those days of consistency that I've stacked back to back for the last 4 months have meant something in their own right? And for me, that they have, like, to be surrounded by the community. He passed away on a Wednesday, and on Sunday I showed up to the group run. I got out of my truck, and the three guys that I run with every Sunday just came up and hugged me. Like, and there's power in that, you know? Damn, I'm crying on camera. Is there anything worse than toxic masculinity? Like, why can't I cry? Like, yeah. It's that compassion element, right? Like, you have to be able to be compassionate for yourself, like, honor your feelings, and it's... But... So the point that I try to make is that life is always going to happen. You're always going to hit bumps in the road. There's always going to be shit that's unexpected, and it's going to try to knock you off your path. And if there's anything that I can try to say is that you have to be able to have a mindset of moving forward.
You know, what you eat really does affect your brain, first of all, and then your body following that. And it's investing in yourself and your health and a clear state of mind and a healthier body is step one for any other goals you have in your life. If you have any other goals, none of that matters if you're not treating your body and you're not conscious, being conscious about making good decisions for yourself and for the environment and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think your environment shapes you as a person. So if you are not 100% happy with your environment, then don't be afraid to change it. Like for me, leaving Amsterdam obviously was my safe environment. And it's always hard, but it brings so much, there are so much more to explore. And I think going out of your comfort zone then can be like a good thing to see, like, what else is there and like what all kind of people are there, and just to try and learn from everybody. So yeah, your environment is really important, and if they don't support what you love, and I encountered that a lot, that my environment, especially as a female CrossFit athlete, like being more muscular has caused me feeling yeah, just struggled a lot, like with the changings of my body, because I was just not the typical girl. And my friends would say like, oh, you look big, like, I don't really like it. And I had it in when I was younger a lot, that they, when I just started CrossFit, that people would say like, I don't like the way you look. And back then I would really feel offended by it and like, oh, maybe I should stop then, because if you don't like it, then probably nobody's going to like it. And do I then even like myself? And I'm happy that after those struggles, I realized like, this is what makes me happy. I'm going to do it anyways. And then from there is such a big world that opens up and you realize like, oh, wait, those are just opinions. And an opinion is not a fact. And the fact that somebody feels that way doesn't mean that I need to please them. I can make my own decisions. And
you know, the fishing industry would like everybody to believe that when you eat a fish, it's caught by a couple of guys out there on their little small fishing boat, you know, with their hook and line, and they're pulling it in and they're working hard hours and everything. But that's not the case. What we're talking about are super trawlers, 100-mile-long lines, 100-mile-long gill nets, gigantic purse seiners, $100 million vessels that are out there financed by large banks and corporations. That's the reality of industrialized fishing. We are absolutely dependent for our survival on plankton, on viruses, on worms, on bees, on trees, on whales and fish. We need them. They actually don't need us, but we need them. And so we don't live independent of them. And unless we learn to live in harmony with all of these other species, then we're not going to survive as a species ourselves. If the oceans die, we die. It is our life support system. And we all have a vested interest in making sure that life in the sea is not diminished. And we need to do everything we can to prevent that from happening.
It is always easier to prevent something, and let's say in terms of wellness, you know, prevent a certain condition, than waiting till it becomes a full-blown illness and then try to backstep. You know, we can use the concept of obesity, and it is far easier to maintain a healthy weight and keep that way than to gain a tremendous amount of weight and have to work to lose it. And you still want to promote that when someone wants to do it, but in terms of the health aspects and what it might do to the body, it is better to maintain that homeostasis. So I would say a homeostatic or a balanced state is always easier to maintain than going down different paths of chronic illness. And I know you've touched on this before in some of your episodes, which are awesome, by the way, but I know one of them, the topic of chronic illness came up. And, you know, these things start insidiously over time. You don't wake up, you don't go to bed one night weighing a certain weight and the next day you're obese, or go to bed one night and the next morning you have heart disease or a severe, you know, mental illness. These things develop over time. So engaging in those preventive techniques or life mindsets are far easier for us as humans to maintain than allowing things to really go down the path of a chronic illness and then trying to pull it back into a homeostatic state. We have prescriptions that can be very helpful to us, but how about proscriptions, P-R-O, proscriptions as being proactive in terms of our health and starting something far earlier before maybe they are fully in a disease state, but just starting to have certain symptoms or day-to-day issues that we all face, but having a skill set that might really be helpful to them and prevent them from going down that other path.
If you go and surround yourself by a bunch of lawyers or a bunch of accountants when you're an entrepreneur, that will make your life quite hard, because they will not fundamentally understand who you are and what you're trying to do. And they will always look at the risk and they'll say, ooh, I remember talking to somebody at a wedding once and explaining about, so we, so when you nearly run out of money, what that feels like. And I explained it feels like a roller coaster, because although it's terrifying, it is also very exhilarating, because when you come out of it, you feel like you've gone through a real rites of passage. And he looked at me, this guy, and he thought I was obviously mad. And so don't surround yourself by people who are not going to get you, not going to understand it. You kind of need to find a group of people who get what being an entrepreneur really means. And that's what I was really lucky to do. And I'm not sure whether I'm allowed to swear on your podcast, Pat.
Absolutely.
But it's the fuck it attitude. It really is. It's kind of like, fuck it, do it. I think that is so important, is that sometimes you have to jump off the cliff. Sometimes you have to dive into the cold water and just take a stand and take a risk. Because if you don't, if you stand on the sideline all the time, you won't move forward. And that really helped me, hanging around those sort of people.
The way that we see change in general in a society is we see change as something that is really difficult to achieve, that is really cumbersome, that is a hassle. We think about, what are people going to think about us, or how am I going to deal with things? But if we take a decision from the heart, we really just realize that change is just a simple part of evolution. Change is becoming who we are. This is what I believe. Change is not becoming someone else. Change is becoming more and more who we are. And so I do think, when I observe kids and when we observe children, that we are all born with the sense that, okay, pain is bad. We don't want to create pain. And of course, some are more sensitive to others, to that concept and to this fact. But I don't think we are born, most of us, with the desire to inflict pain and create suffering all the time, right? So this is something that is more like a learned behavior, a suppressed behavior, a hidden behavior, actually, a hidden impact of what we are doing. And becoming vegan is really, I think, the least we can do in terms of aligning ourselves with our true nature. The other thing that I want to share is that I don't believe that human is a species that is an omnivore at all. And it's not just a personal belief. I think we just have to observe the anatomy of, you know, of human beings, the instinct that we have. And when we watch either a slaughterhouse video or when we take a stroll in the park and we see a squirrel, our instinct is not one of an omnivore. We don't want to run off, catch a squirrel, start eating it, you know. That's not who we are. And so I think the change that we need to embrace is really to become who we are individually and as a collective.
In 2019, the Lancet Medical Journal, which is like the National Geographic of medical journals, it's like our leading, one of our most prominent medical journals, published the report of 38 global experts that they had handpicked from institutions like Harvard, University of Oxford, University of London, to go out and answer the same question that 19-year-old man asked me on the ward 18 years ago. And the same question that my patients ask me all the time: what should we eat? Not just patients, not just you and me, Pat, but everybody on earth. What's a blueprint for a healthy diet? And they looked at decades of evidence, and they came up with what they called the Eat Lancet Report, or the Planetary Health Plate. And what they recommended, this blueprint for optimal human nutrition for everybody on the planet, including the 800 million people who are living with food poverty and do not get enough calories, including the 3.5 billion people whose health is being devastated by too much of the wrong foods. What was their blueprint for a healthy diet? It is a whole food, plant-based diet. They said that half of our food should be fruits and vegetables, 25% should be whole grains, and the remainder should be made up of especially protein-rich plant foods like legumes and beans and nuts and seeds and lentils, with some small amount of added sugars and a small amount of healthy plant-based oils, polyunsaturated oils like extra virgin olive oil. Having looked at the evidence, they were very, very clear that animal products should be regarded as optional, and plants always remain the healthier choice. And if you do live in a country where you have unlimited food options, like many people are fortunate enough to do, if you decide to consume animal products, then you should consume small amounts. For example, you know, an ounce of chicken or fish each day, an egg every other day, 7 grams of red meat per day, which is the equivalent of having one serving of red meat every 2 weeks or so. Because if you consume more animal products than that, you are moving outside what they called the zone of safety. You're into the area where these foods are going to be harming your health rather than improving your health. And when they looked at the evidence, and the paper that they published was extraordinary, they estimated that if they could wave a magic wand and get everybody on Earth to eat like this and get the resources and get the food to people and get the education to people and change the food system, that it would prevent almost 12 million preventable deaths per year, plus hundreds of millions of fewer stents, bypasses, courses of chemotherapy, statin medications, you know, insulin prescriptions, hours on dialysis. It would save literally hundreds of billions of dollars in healthcare costs. Not only did the Eat Lancet Commission recommend a whole food plant-based diet, but in 2021, we now know that a healthy plant-based diet is endorsed as a healthy choice by the British Dietetic Association, the American Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the American Cancer Society, the World Health Organization. Last year, Pat, in 2020, August 2020, in the middle of this pandemic, the American Medical Association, who were at that time finalizing the new edition of the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. And in that letter, they asked the USDA to stop making meat and dairy obligatory food groups within the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. And the reason the American Medical Association made that request, and their letter was very clear, and I'm quoting here, I may be slightly misquoting, but to best my recollection, the phrase they used was that meat and dairy are not necessary in all diets. They're not necessary, Pat. You don't need them. And not only that, they pointed out that these foods are strongly linked to increased risks of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and numerous cancers, including prostate cancer.
It's a Jay Krishnamurti quote. It is no measure of health to be well-adjusted to a profoundly sick society. So rebel, do things differently, and remember that just because it's popular doesn't mean it's healthy.
I used to, you know, go for a run in Central Park when I lived in New York. I'd run 6-7 miles, visualizing sort of everything I want to build, manifest, so forth. And I learned that, you know, through the power of visualization and hard work, applying yourself properly, you really can make it, most of those things happen. And the challenge with that was I was making maybe a few too many things happen. So I don't do that anymore, strangely enough. But I do create roadmaps, and it's not a wish list, it's a reality list. And it's where, you know, I want to go in business with our company, different things I want to see us bring to, you know, bring to life in business, different projects or products. And it's pretty ambitious. It goes way beyond where, you know, someone looking at our company today could imagine us going. And I've been doing that for quite a few years, and of course had a lot of naysayers in the early years. Well, why don't you just focus on this or just focus on that? And but you know, I stuck with it. And I mean, a lot of it's, you know, timing, because the plant-based world is really evolving so fast, and that's fantastic. But you know, you got to do the work at the foundation level too. Make sure that you're innovating and creating and offering something unique and new, and also building the proper team. So I do frame it out, but it's a little more of a, you know, it's a little more of a practical exercise these days as opposed to a mental or visual one.
But you know, I told him I can't have your kids. It would probably be deadly for me to try if I could even carry a child without miscarriage. You're going to have to take care of me when I become disabled. I'm not going to live a long life, you know, and it's not very romantic when someone says they want to marry you to, you know, lay that out as an answer. But he's an amazing soul. And he said he'd rather have a short life with me than a lifetime with anybody else. And he was going to be by my side and just give me the best darn life he could. And so I thought I had already won the lottery then, because one, still alive, and made it all the way through med school, you know, was told I couldn't do it. I did it. I was about to live my dream. I got my first choice of residency in California. I was leaving winter behind, and I met a dreamboat guy who wants to marry me, who's the best guy I've ever met to this day. No offense. He's the most amazing person I've ever met. So I'd already felt like I won the lottery, and I never felt like lupus took that from me. I still felt like one of the luckiest people on the planet because I was living my dream and doing all these wonderful things, and now I had a partner to do that with. But that was actually what happened that led to me actually being able to heal completely was after I met him. Even longer story, less long, is that this year will be 16 years that I've been completely lupus free. I've never had a symptom come back. I have had negative labs, not only for lupus, but my cholesterol that I was told genetically high, nothing to do with all the cheese I ate, totally normal, actually lower than most people would consider normal. Blood pressures, like I run marathons, which I do not. I've had two beautiful, healthy sons with totally normal, healthy pregnancies. So, you know, life has been amazing. And, you know, a lot of the research that shows how bad certain foods are for you, like dairy, existed back in the day when I was sick, but my doctors didn't know about it. I didn't know about it. And that makes me very angry because there's so many people who are suffering, not just because they don't know my protocol, but because they don't even know the research that's been out there for 30, 40, 50 years that shows how certain things are actually harming them and they're feeding them to the children.
And so really just allowing that emotion to come through, the feeling requires to be felt. You know, Freud said that unexpressed emotions will always come forth in uglier ways. And so if we don't let that stuff out of us, it eats away at us. And I tell people all the time, I go, if you don't think your emotions can affect your health, then go find my fucking eyebrows because they're gone. You know, like yeah. I have no hair anywhere in my body because I stressed myself out so much from my emotions that it screwed up my immune system and my hair fell out. Right. And so nobody doubts that like stress and anxiety and all this stuff is causing heart attacks and cancer and all these kind of things in people. Right. So if that's true, if people believe that, if you really believe like, well, stress will give you a heart attack or cancer or any of these things, which it will, most health issues are from our emotions, are from emotional stuff. Then maybe the inverse is true. Why wouldn't the inverse of that be true? Could you do good things for yourself? Could you say good things to yourself? Could you change your thought patterns and heal your body? I get there in breath work and it's sustainable, meaning that I can't, like, if I'm having a bad Tuesday afternoon, I can't go drop some ayahuasca. You know, I got kids and wife and businesses and things I'm doing, right? I can't go, you know, puking into a bucket in the jungle, but I can lay down in my bedroom and breathe for 20 minutes and completely change my state. And I'll come out of the bedroom like, okay, I just restarted my day. And so it's actually a more sustainable thing. It's hilarious to me that people will sit down with a doctor. They'll go to the doctor for depression, anxiety, whatever. And the doctor will be like, okay, you know, here's this medication. Side effects are, you know, rectal bleeding, seizures, brain aneurysm, whatever. And they're like, all right, give it to me. I'll take it. And then I'm like, hey, why don't you just try laying on the floor and breathing in a certain way? And they're like, I don't know. I need to see more research on that first.
Right.
It's like, what? You're going to take the medication that's going to make you bleed out of your ass, but you need to see more research on laying down and breathing? I mean, that's literally the way our society is going today. It's insanity. It's like 70% of people are on one prescription medication in the United States, and 50% are on two. It's okay to make mistakes. You're going to screw up. I say this a lot in my classes. Like, you're going to screw up a bunch of times this week, Pat. Are you going to beat yourself up every time you screw up? Most of us do. Most of us are beating ourselves up. Oh shit, I forgot to do the thing. Oh, my wife told me this. Oh, the restaurant. Oh, this, you know, and like we're doing this all day long. We're beating ourselves up. Oh, I'm such an idiot. And you know, if you could stop doing that, wow, what a shift that would create just in how you feel.
They were told that they'd never be parents. By the fertility experts. You know, you go home, make your peace with it. Not gonna be parents. You don't have the wherewithal to get it done. So, sorry to bum you out, but it's not gonna happen. They have three kids now. Mm. Not two, three. Just had a third. So obviously they're the answer to your question, the minute I meet with somebody, I'm working at a positivity level, working at a mind level. The mind creates something that the body follows. The pattern that you start with in your mind, if it's positive, it's going to make positive results. I'm manifest oriented. I'm positive. I'm very determined. And I don't believe failure exists under these circumstances. Not an option. Doesn't happen. Can't happen. Not a reality. It's not part of my reality. So I call them mom and dad right from the very beginning. I do things like that. I also want to talk to patients and ask them how much better they are. How much better is your headache? How much better is your energy? How much better is your stomach aches? Whatever. And they say, well, what do you mean how much? I said, what percentage better are you? Are you 50% better? Are you 80% better? When you ask the patient to detail that, that detail makes a huge difference in their ability to conceptualize and to accept the reality that they've made a physical difference. That actually puts it into pictorial words, so to speak. 80% better. Now, imagine if you missed that opportunity. You never ask them, you're feeling better? Good. Good enough. You're feeling better. That's great. No, I don't do that. What percent better are you? 80%. That makes a statement that locks into the conceptualization processes in the brain. And those conceptualization processes start to map out your descriptions, your words. Your words matter. The specificity of your words matter. The positivity of your specific words matter. So I want to know what percent better you are, because I think you're going to use that like you will never believe. You're going to use that in detail to create a picture, an image that you're going to actually rally around unconsciously. Believe in miracles. Be the miracle that is programmed to produce miracles. You are a miracle. So let's keep it going. Let's take what you are, plug it into your present life and in the world that you live in, and continue to make miracles with a sense of belief. Believe in the process before anything happens, and you'll surely create them.
So, yeah, in a nutshell, my opinion of like healing is we don't cure people, because curing people means bringing them back to how they were before the disease. But according to yoga and this tantric philosophy, you are the result of your character. So your character predicts your health, your quality of life and all these things. So disease is also a product of this default mode network, your character. So in order to heal, you can't bring somebody back to how they were before the disease, because they're just going to get sick again. You have to become a different person completely. You have to transform. So we don't cure people, we transform people, right? And you have to change who you are from a deep level of personality and ego. And you have to, in order to do that, you need to understand who you are in the first place. So that's why our whole system is designed, to help people realize who they are, their truth, and then find their real life path through that. That's one of the biggest problems we have in the world now, is the division that's going on. You know, it's the separation. It's the hubris that's being programmed into people, making people think that they are superior to other people because they share a opinion that some newspaper also has told them to have, right? So, like, if that person really thought deep before judging other people about their opinion, about where did that opinion that they hold so dearly come from? They'll realize actually they just read it in a paper, and that paper told them to have that opinion. So many people form opinions just on a few articles that they read in the newspapers. And then that makes them feel they're superior to other people. And it literally puts up a barrier. And that's what's going on right now, is that you have division going on. The media is a big part of this, and it's dividing people instead of uniting people, and is dividing people without the people who are being divided even realizing that they're now being programmed to be divided. That's how crazy it is, that people are not even aware that this is going on.
Oh, you know what? Just give it a shot. Please try. There's a great line in a book that I admired a lot, and it was that, we know that it will never be enough, but try anyway. And no matter what anyone does, us individually will never be enough to change everything. But if we all give it a shot, it's gonna make a difference. It truly will be. So let me say to you all listening who are thinking about being an entrepreneur in this space, go for it. Give it a shot. Listen, you might fail. You might fall flat on your face. You might not raise any money. You might start your company and then it collapses. There's 1,000 bad things that can happen. Trust me, most businesses fail. At the same time, try. Nothing has ever been done that has forever changed the world, that has ever been a transformational moment without risk, ever. There's never been a cautious approach that we all look back to and think that really was the way to go. If you look at social justice issues, I mean, in the 1960s, the march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Alabama to raise issues related to voting rights for African Americans, how risky was that? I mean, these are folks who've gotten beat trying to walk across a bridge peacefully. And that forever changed the civil rights movement. I mean, how many folks, trying to end slavery, in the 1800s gave their lives to fight to end slavery. Talk about risky. My gosh, they gave up their lives for it. When we're talking about starting businesses, here's what I promise you. You are not going to be killed doing it. What I promise you also, you're not going to be treated as if you are trying to do civil disobedience in the 1960s, in a southern city. So those things are not going to happen to you. So remove that risk. What's the worst thing can happen? You don't succeed. Considering the upside of what happens if you start a company where you could make a big impact and change the food system and save billions of animals, give it a shot and try.
In some ways, like the mechanisms in our mind that default to anxiety and depression, like those things were meant to help us survive in a different time, in a totally different history and a totally different landscape, right? So it's like when you were in the jungle and this was obviously 50,000 years ago or whatever, it's like when you were in the jungle and a lion crosses your path, and I talked about this in the first book and probably the first podcast too, but it's like if that lion crosses your path, the fact that you have really reactive mechanisms in your brain that turn on that anxiety response, the fight or flight response, like really quickly, that's a great thing. That means you're getting out of that situation before the guy next to you is. When you develop a lot, like the, for better or for worse, the modern lifestyle that we have created, it's like our brains are still basically the same structures from anywhere from the research basically says our brains haven't evolved in like 30,000 to 100,000 years. And so when we talk about ruminating on specific ideas and whatnot, it's like the brain has a negativity bias because it's like anything that could be dangerous enough to me that it could kill me is something that I want to avoid, right? And so in the 50,000 years ago, most of those things were like in the moment physical threats. It was a tiger, it was a bear, it was a lion. And I say that sometimes and do the whole lions and tigers and bears, whatever. But that was a very useful thing, right? Today, when it's like the things that scare us are like, again, it's an article that we read online, an idea we get into our head or whatever. They're not really actionable things in the moment. That makes it so that like we've created this like strange interaction where like our brains are not suited to this material. And that's why we get these different experiences in our life. It's like, we used to be anxious when we approached somebody. And I mean, obviously there's the whole, like even today, it's like you go approach somebody at the bar, that person could reject you, whatever. But it's like back in the day, 50,000 years ago, if somebody rejected you from a small tribe of people in the wild, that meant you're out on your own in the Amazon and you're dead. And today, we still have that physical and emotional response inside of us, but it doesn't mean the same exact thing. And so that disparity makes us feel like, oh my God, like, I don't know what to do with this experience. Like, why am I so afraid, so anxious when like, I'm just going to, go to an interview or a date or something like that. And it's like, if we really knew.
And when I was going in and looking at the science, I actually really wanted to justify my current diet. I didn't want to change the way I was eating because it was working for me. And so it was very challenging to start reading the research and seeing that, well, maybe although I feel good today, maybe this is setting me up for failure long term. And it took me a while to sort of come to grips with that. And then, you know, once I had realized that, look, if I do value my long-term health here, this isn't a case of let's deal with cardiovascular disease in a couple decades and then it'll all be okay. We can change my diet then. I realized that diseases like that are bubbling away under the surface for decades. And so if I want to avoid having a heart attack in my 40s or 50s or 60s, I need to start making these changes now. And, you know, being the big meat eater I was, that was a very, very confronting and challenging thing to hear. You know, I kind of almost did everything I could to not come to terms with that. I think they're all terribly important. I think where we're going wrong the most is probably nutrition. And I think that there was a study called the Global Burden of Disease Study in 2018 that looked at a bunch of risk factors. Mind you, I don't believe sleep was in there, but alcohol consumption and smoking, all of this stuff was in there, and diet was by far the largest predictor for development of chronic disease and premature death. Based on today's data that we have about human health, based on today's data that we have about planetary health, very plant-rich or plant-exclusive diet does make the most sense. It's really the only way forward for us to progress as a species to start to squeeze chronic disease out of our communities, but also to feed a growing population without further degrading our planet. And, you know, it's a very unintelligent thing to continually damage your host. And we really rely on planet Earth. And so we better start looking after it. You can't go wrong if most or all of your calories are coming from fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, herbs, and spices.
I discovered what I'm here to share, at least for now, with the world. Right. And I don't think there is anything more important than giving people the power to take their health back. And I don't think there's anything more empowering and powerful than giving somebody the ability to spend more years on this planet with the people they love. And I'm just aware of like the shortness of life. And I just know, and I've seen, you know, my grandparents have their life cut short and, you know, miss decades with, you know, their grandkids. And I just feel like I'm doing something important, you know?
Right.
And why would I do anything that is not aligned with that? Like, to me, it's a waste of my time. And I feel like I have this knowledge for a reason, and I have this ability, hopefully, to communicate it. And I, you know, was born into a great family and given a lot of opportunity. And what am I doing if not everything about me is aligned with that and focused on that? Yeah, I just don't think there's anything more powerful. There's literally, to me, there is nothing more powerful than giving somebody that ability to spend more time with their loved ones. And that's why I do what I do.